Holman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. What did I do, Bernard Skinnerd, on the YouTube chat? You're an awful human being who hates the Titans like Jared. Oh, he's not talking about me being an awful human being. I do not hate the Titans, Bernard. In fact, I love the Titans. I am going to the game on Sunday, and I will be rooting for the Tennessee Titans, and I hope they win. And not only that, Ian, what have I already done about Sunday's game?
You've called a win.
I am predicting the Titans are going to beat the Jets, and they are going to beat the Jets 9-7. But I don't feel confident by any means in thinking the Titans are going to win on Sunday, other than just the, I've seen this too many times when I'm looking at a game on paper and I'm saying to myself, I don't see how the Titans win this game. And then the Titans go out and they win the game. I'm like, well, I guess they figured it out some way, somehow, and it's happened numerous times over the years. And a lot of people would say when I ask, you know, okay, if the Titans are going to win, how are they going to win the game? You guys would say, the defense, Jared, the Titans defense, it's a great defense. And it's hard to argue that right now because the Titans, after 1 week of play, have the NFL's number one ranked defense by yards, which is how we do it. They're 18th in points allowed, but again, that includes a pick six and a punt block, and that's really not their fault. Total yards, the Titans are number one. But I'm skeptical about how good the Titans defense really is. Not that I think that the Titans defense is bad, but I'm not a believer that when I look at this team, that they are a dominant, can carry the operation no matter what defense. The 2000 Ravens, the 85 Bears, even the 2000 Titans, which technically finished number one in the NFL in total defense, ahead of the 2000 Ravens. I'm not sure this Titans defense is as good as 2007, in which Vince Young quarterbacked a team that made the playoffs. I think this defense might be on par with 2021. But the difference was in 2021, when all four guys up front were healthy, Autry, Simmons, Dupree, and Landry, they could get after the quarterback. This team, I don't know that Arden Key is going to be able to get after the quarterback the same way a healthy Bud Dupree did. And so while I recognize the fact that they had a very good game on Sunday, and I recognize the fact they've got good players. Simmons is a good player. Sweat is a good player. Landry is a good player. Snead is a good player. While I recognize all of that, I also think that they're probably more of a top third of the league defense than they are a dominant or elite defense. Because I think most of what happened last week had to do with Caleb Williams and just how bad he was, more so than it had to do with your great defense. But this will be the week that tells us whether or not the defense is truly dominant. Because, again, while Aaron Rodgers may not be the Aaron Rodgers of 3 years ago, he may not be the Aaron Rodgers that is headed to Canton. He may be coming off of an Achilles tear, and he's in a similar system, but he's with a new team, basically, and he's got one game at the... He's still Aaron Rodgers. The throws that Caleb missed on Sunday, the wide-open one to DJ Moore he missed, there was one throw against a zone where I think it might have been DJ Moore sat down in the zone and Caleb threw it and it like skipped to him because he threw it 2 yards short of the player. Like, those aren't going to happen on Sunday. If you give Aaron that kind of time and Aaron's got somebody open, Aaron's going to hit him in the hands because he's Aaron Rodgers. So when I look at the Jets, and granted, I don't think the Jets are a dominant offensive team. I wouldn't say that they're Kansas City. I wouldn't even say that they're Houston. But when I look at the Jets have a starting quarterback, a legitimate high-end quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. They have one of the top running backs in the NFL in Breece Hall. They have one of the number one receivers in the NFL in Garrett Wilson. And they've got a solid offensive line between Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, and they've got a solid offensive line. So if the Jets go out there on Sunday and they just can't do anything too, then all of a sudden the Titans might really have a dominant defense. Now, if the Titans have a dominant defense, I think there's kind of a whole nother discussion that has to be had if Levis performs the same way that he performed against the Bears as well, which is, okay, at what point do you say, hey, I don't want to waste this elite dominant defense. Let me go put in a game manager at quarterback, and you do have a game manager on your bench. Let me go put a game manager in there to try to carry Collins my way this thing to the playoffs. But here's the other thing about the dominant defense that did not happen last Sunday. You didn't turn the quarterback over. You didn't force a fumble. You didn't get an interception. You didn't any of that stuff. And the thing about dominant, elite, carry you defenses is they not only get turnovers, they get meaningful turnovers. Go back to that 2000 Ravens team. The image I have from that game blistered into my brain. Yesterday we were talking about the difference between short-term memory and long-term memory. The memory I have is not of Ray Lewis running the ball into the end zone, but it's what happened immediately after that. When I turned to my dad and I looked and I said, are we going to lose? And I remember looking at the 5 minutes on the clock. And for some reason, and I don't even know if O'Charlie's exists anymore, and if they do, there's like one more restaurant in town. I don't know if you guys remember when O'Charlie's used to be everywhere in town. And I can remember seeing an O'Charlie's logo behind my dad's head and saying, are we going to lose? And my dad looked at me down by 14 and just said, yeah. He said, yep. And I'm like, lose? We're not supposed to lose. That Ravens team hit one offensive play. A ball on the sideline from Trent Dilfer to Shannon Sharpe that set up a touchdown, and other than that, they didn't do anything. But that's what a dominant, elite, carry you kind of defense can do. They can carry you. You get a punt blocked, they'll find a way to win the game. You throw a stupid pick six, they'll find a way to win the game. Now, you can't win the game if they do them both. But if this is an elite, dominant defense, then we're going to have some different conversations. I just don't think they're there yet. And I don't think they're going to be there. Because I don't think they have enough elite high-end players. Again, go back to these carry you defenses. These teams that are just, I mean, defense through and through. Go back to Peyton Manning's team in Denver that won the Super Bowl. That team had DeMarcus Ware, who is in the Hall of Fame. Von Miller, who is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Chris Harris, who was probably the best corner in the league at that point in time. And I'm sure there's some other guys I'm forgetting, but like they had Hall of Fame players. I don't know that this defense has Hall of Fame players. Simmons and Snead and maybe Sweat are in the, hey, those are high-end, top-of-the-league players. But again, we're talking about elite. I don't know. Like, the best defensive player in the game on Sunday is Sauce Gardner on their team. Because he might just be the best, period, the best corner in the NFL. I promise you, I am not a hater. And I am not hating as far as the defense is concerned. I recognize defense is good. Probably a top third in the league. Probably the ninth best defense or something like that in the NFL. But I don't think they're number one. I don't think they're elite. I don't think they can do all the hard work. But if they can do it to Aaron Rodgers, Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, maybe they are. I'm not ruling out that they might be. I mean, I'm not this kind of guy that's just going to say, I don't think they are right now, so I promise you that I will think that forever. I mean, if they go out there and they do their thing, then I will give them credit. But having a hard time getting there. One text says, Jared, if I'm not mistaken, how many times has Aaron Rodgers beaten the Titans? Boy, let's think. Titans won in 2008. So Rodgers won in 2012. And Rodgers won in 2020. The Titans won in 2016 at Nissan Stadium. Parrish Cox, of all people, had an interception. That was a game Taylor Lewan got kicked out of. And the Titans won in 2022 in Green Bay when Todd Downing had a couple of cocktails on his way home, and I had to walk 2 miles from the stadium to the hotel because, for whatever reason, we decided not to get a hotel close to the stadium. And there was no way to get an Uber or whatever out of the stadium.
I'm seeing 2-3 in 5 career games versus the Titans.
Isn't that what I just said? 2012 and 2020? And then 2008, the Titans won. 2016, the Titans won. And 2022, the Titans won.
I think that checks out.
Ha, 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 ha! Bang, bang, bang. 615-737-1025. Corey Curtis, News 2, joins us next here on the program on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. 615-737-1025. Here if you want to weigh in. Tune in to 93.3 Totally Hits Nashville tomorrow for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will take on Western Kentucky at Floyd Stadium. Pregame at 4:30, kickoff at 6. That's on 93.3 Totally Hits Nashville. Then we got Vandy football as well. Tomorrow, Georgia State on the road. Pregame 4:30, kickoff at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And we have our college football game of the week. That's right, at 11 a.m. when Alabama takes on Wisconsin, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree drafts, and wall-to-wall sports. Be sure to join me, Chris Sanders, and Dee Mace live at John Bon Jovi's this Sunday, 9:30 to 11:30 for the award-winning pregame show ahead of the Titans and the Jets. The award-winning pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon, and... because I'm in a good mood, let's give something away. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets to see Coe Wetzel at Ascend Amphitheater on Friday, September 27th. So I would have forgotten about this if a texter hadn't texted in earlier today to say, hey, what about Corey Curtis's slam dunk 4,000 yards this year for Will Levis? Corey, 129 and the ugliest pick six I think I have ever seen. Do you still feel like 4,000 yards is a slam dunk for the Titans quarterback?
If he plays 17 games, I think he's probably going to get there. I do.
At 129 a game?
I would anticipate him throwing for more than 129 yards, like the Bears would anticipate Caleb Williams throwing for more than 93. You know, that last year Ryan Tannehill opened with 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and I don't think we anticipated him doing that each game the rest of the season.
So you do not think that Sunday is a representation of Will Levis's deficiencies, but a one-off, or do you think that it is a red flag what we saw from the Titans quarterback?
I think it's all of the above, all right? I mean, it is who he is and where he is. I mean, look, what did he face? Pressure on 50% of his throws? It was most or second most in the league. I mean, the offensive line's got to be better. He's got to handle it better. He can't, you know, the first half, he just dirted balls when there was nothing there. He managed the game. He did what Brian Callahan wanted him to do. You know, as I've said, they're teaching him a new way to play quarterback, and I think it's realistic to say he's not going to learn it in 1 week. You know, he's still going to revert to some things. And if he keeps reverting to those things, he won't be the Titans quarterback. He's got to learn. So we're going to have to see if he can learn under Brian Callahan and advance himself. I think he probably can. But, again, we will wait and see. Offensive line's got to be better. He's got to be better. For me, what's concerning is, you know, we've talked all preseason in training camp about missing Calvin Ridley deep. And what did we see on Sunday? Missing Calvin Ridley deep. And, that was really concerning to me. I mean, look, the interception's a bonehead play. I watched Brett Favre make plenty of bonehead plays when he was young. I watched Josh Allen miss the broadside of a barn when he was young.
Did you ever see Josh Allen throw that pick up by one in the fourth quarter, though?
Look, I have seen Josh Allen his first 2 years in the league, and I was dead wrong because I thought he was an absolute garbage pick and was never going to make it in the NFL because he could not hit a stationary target half the time. But he got better. He got better. Go look at his stats from his rookie year. They're not great. All right.
But at the same time, like, they made the playoffs Josh Allen's second year. This is his second year.
They had a good team around him. I mean, there's
better.
I mean,
better than the defense Levis has right now.
Well, but Levis doesn't play behind the defense. He plays behind the offensive line.
So it's the line's fault.
Well, no, it's both of their fault. Line's got to play better. He's got to play better. But you're asking, you know, which one, you know, what's different? You know, Allen had a better group in front of him, you know, blocking the way. Look, you know, he had an open pocket, and he throws a rifle shot to Calvin Ridley for 22 yards. You give him a pocket, he's going to deliver some footballs. But that doesn't excuse the mistakes. They both need to be better. My simple thing is this. If he threw for 300 yards and three touchdowns, I was not going to anoint him Dan Marino, all right? We need to see more. We need to see if he grows or doesn't grow. We'll know. We'll know. But I think saying you know now is putting the cart before the horse.
So I was going to ask you, Corey Curtis with us, I was going to ask you what was the most concerning thing that you saw Sunday. And it sounds to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me like the overthrows to Ridley are what really bothers you.
The fact that they can't get on the same page, yeah, that does bother me.
That bothers me the most. What bothers me the most is the fact that he won't slide and the fact that the coach told him before the fourth quarter, don't do anything stupid.
Yeah.
And not only did he do something stupid, he went out and did the single stupidest thing you could possibly do, minus running the ball all the way back to the end zone and then handing it to a Bear player to run into the end zone with the ball. Like,
His interception was bad. It's not much different than the Tua interception last night.
But Tua was winning in the fourth quarter when he did it.
No, but, I mean, we see Tua in the fourth quarter. He's usually not very good.
I go back to what Belichick said.
Guys make mistakes. Will he make that mistake again? I agree with you on the sliding. He's been told he can't kill himself, and he continues to do it, and he's going to get hurt, and that is concerning. That is concerning. My point with the Ridley thing is we've been talking about this. We've been talking about this, and they say they're working on it, but they're still not hitting. And that's concerning to me. But see, that's concerning to me is they've been working on it. It's not getting better.
But can he all of a sudden start listening to the coach?
Sure, he can. Just
one day it's like, okay, yesterday I didn't listen to the coach, but this time when I heard what the coach said, I was like, you know what?
He is used to doing the whole thing himself, right? And
I'm sure he was coached when Vrabel was here.
But when I say doing the whole thing himself, he's used to running the ball all over the field and trying to make everything happen by himself, all right? And they're trying to coach that out of him. And I don't think expecting it to be coached out of him in one game is necessarily reasonable. Again, if we're 8-9 games into the season and we're talking about the same stuff, then I'm going to shake my head and say, guys, I don't know.
But so after I guess one I'm game, just asking, Corey, and I love you, but I guess I'm just asking this. If we can't trust him, like if we saw on Sunday him refuse the coaching. Again, I don't think it was,
I think it's natural instinct more than it's refusing coaching.
Right. But it's not like Dan Marino being told by Jimmy Johnson, hey, throw the curl, and then saying, screw you, coach, I'm throwing it deep, which Dan Marino did do. Like, it's not that.
He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
It's just when the natural inclination kicks in,
mm-hmm.
it overrides everything he's learned up into that point. It's like a fail-safe system.
It's like yourself. Your natural inclination is to take extreme points of view. Sometimes you call me and say, am I wrong on this? Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you say, am I going too far too fast? Sometimes you don't. And it's being in repetitive situations. What's that?
I said, because I think I'm right about this. I don't need to ask you if I'm right. I know I'm right.
Okay, let me ask you this. What did you think of Levis at halftime?
At halftime, I was very pleased with the lack of bad decisions.
There you go.
By the entire team.
And then in the second half, What did he do? He made bad decisions.
Yeah, so when the going got tough. The way I look at it with a young quarterback.
When it got.
The way I look at it is, and I don't look at Levis as a rookie anymore. A lot of people are making that excuse, you know, the kind of crutch that's like, well, you know, he's only 10 games in, so he's still a rookie. I don't do that. To me, the jump is from year one to year two, not from game 17 to game 18. And he's 25 years old. And the way I look at it is, you know, there are certain expectations that I have for a second-year quarterback in terms of mental decisions that they make on the field. And Levis, when it got big in every moment, Levis could not meet it. And it took one thing, a blocked punt. It took one play to put the entire team on their heels. And that's when the quarterback, if he's a rookie, it's one thing, but that's when a quarterback's got to take the bull by the horns and say, all right, guys, I've got it. It will be okay. And he couldn't do that. He got just as rattled. And so did the coach, by the way. He got rattled by the blocked punt. And then all of a sudden, every decision he made was a bad one.
You're absolutely right. That the blocked punt rattled everyone on that football team. There's no question about that whatsoever. And he has to respond to it better. Brian Callahan has to respond to it better. The offensive line has to respond to it better. But I can't just sit here and say, well, you know what? Opening day in Chicago, he did this. So it's never going to happen. It's just never going to happen. I can't put all my eggs in one two-quarter segment of football and say this is the way it's going to be forever.
Well, I mean, I'm coupling it with last year.
Ryan Tannehill last year in New Orleans lost the game by himself.
Ryan Tannehill in that game, first of all, we forget the fact, again, going back to the blocked punt, like we forget about the fact that they didn't pick the ball up, that the refs called it dead on the ball, on the fumble return for a touchdown.
By Kevin Byard. Yeah, but he still, that doesn't change the fact that he completed less than 50% of his passes, and he threw three interceptions, and the offense only put 15 points on the board against a bad Saints team.
Right, but to me, I chalk that up. And you go look at the way Tannehill played the next week and Tannehill's body of work. I chalk that up to the fact that Ryan Tannehill didn't play in the preseason and wasn't ready for the offensive line that was in front of him.
Ryan Tannehill is like a 12-year veteran. You can't tell me he wasn't ready to play.
I was screaming on the radio when you guys on the preseason broadcast were like, Ryan Tannehill's going to hand off three times. What?
Okay, so we're saying the next week he goes 20 of 24 for 250 in an overtime win over the Chargers.
I'm not freaking out about the missed throws to Ridley. That is a physical issue that, you know, you will work it out on the practice
field. You're more concerned about mental decision making.
Yes, and Tannehill didn't mentally lose that game last year. They lost that game. They lost that game out of bad performance, and I think a lot of that was he didn't know how bad that offensive line in front of him was about to be. Now, again, I was screaming about it because you know the right tackle story. But, again, with Levis, for me, he reverted to too many stupid decisions. And when the coach says, I told him not to do it and he did it anyyways, that's a huge red flag that a second-year quarterback shouldn't be having.
It's a red flag and it's a mistake and it's inexcusable. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen the next week. Look, if he does it, like in the next 3-4 weeks, if it comes up again and again, then it's a problem. You're talking about something that's happened once.
No, it happened last year.
Okay, we're going to go back to last year. All right, let's go back to last year.
I'm hoping for a jump from year one to year two.
You just told me how awful that offensive line was.
Oh, it's awful.
It was awful, and he played there, and he took his shots, and he got hit, and he put his body in jeopardy, and absolutely. Absolutely. He's got to learn from that stuff. We're talking about one game this year.
But my problem last year, and it was the coach's problem too, because you could see it from the Pittsburgh to the Tampa Bay game, was you remember the end of the Pittsburgh game?
He didn't want to start him anyway.
Do you remember the Pittsburgh game last year?
I don't remember it specifically.
The Thursday nighter, Levis was very good in the first half. He missed Spears on a throw right before halftime, but he was very good in the first half. And then Vrabel took the ball out of his hands right around halftime to kick a field goal because he missed Spears on a throw. And then the Steelers, you know, were trailing the whole game, and they came back, and they scored with like 4 minutes left. And the Titans were down by four, and he misses Kyle Phillips short on a fourth down, throws the ball on the sideline to Burks. Now, TD says that he was coached to throw it to Burks on the sideline, so I'll have to give him that. But if you remember that last drive, they start off pinned back. He just throws a ball on the sideline for DeAndre that DeAndre has to go up and knock away from the defensive back.
Yeah, it was like, I remember that one.
He got out there and just said, I'm throwing it at DeAndre. I don't care how many people are.
And that happened a lot last year.
And so he threw two balls to the end zone at the end of the game. The first one got dropped. The second one got picked.
That's right.
Next week against Tampa Bay, they got put in a similar situation. He threw a ball down the middle of the field that didn't get intercepted, and Tim Kelly immediately starts calling bubble screens for Kyle Phillips because as a coach, he realized, I can't trust this guy. So now you go into year two. And, of course, I mean, look, those were probably bad coaches last year, but they're not the worst coaches. And so they were trying to coach that out of him. So now he understands going into year two. And he goes out with a different coaching staff and does the exact same thing. I mean, at what point is it, this is who he is? For me, year two.
It's part of who he is, but they are trying to coach it out of him. And for what did we say? For two quarters, they did, right? For two quarters, he made solid decisions. So you build on that. You coach out the bad stuff and you build on it. Look, he may not do it. You might be right. But this one game, we can't say he's not going to get better. He may not. He may not, but I can't say, well, game one of year two, it's over.
I think there's a chance he could be an NFL quarterback. I don't think there's any chance he can be a superstar quarterback. And that's what we went into this year hoping that he was going to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if you're saying, is he going to be a top five quarterback? I mean, he's got a long way to go. But after watching Josh Allen for 2 years, nobody thought he was a top five quarterback. A lot of people thought, including myself, he wasn't an NFL quarterback. And I'm not saying he's Josh Allen, and I'm not saying everybody improves like Josh Allen. There are way more quarterbacks in this league that fail horribly, that come in with, I mean, look at Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. Shoot, look at Deshaun Watson. He was on top of the world, and now he's trash out there.
Well, Deshaun, I think, is in like a separate category of, you know,
yes,
what the hell went wrong issues there. I think
there are plenty of guys who look the part, have the tools to be the part, but like, what are we talking about? Decision making, heart, you know, quick twitch, you know, all of that stuff, and that's what we've got to see. But you know, I know you like to make fun of me for my 4,000 yard take. Jake Ferguson was on pace to throw for 4,000 yards.
Jake Browning. Yep.
If Brian Callahan and the coach over there can coach him up, I'm confident they can coach up Will Levis to a better level than we saw Sunday.
That's some disrespect for Jake Browning. I
don't hate Jake Browning, but Jake Browning's a backup.
Jake Browning game managed Washington to the college football playoff. Will Levis never won anything.
Okay. We're talking about college. All right. Let's talk about college. Jameis Winston won a national championship. What did he do?
Jameis Winston was a bad boy, man. In college, Jameis Winston was.
Yes, he was. And in the NFL, he's an interception machine.
But he was also a turnover machine in college. You go back to that last year at Florida State, there was a lot of, how are they winning?
We can find a million college quarterbacks who were bad boys. Who is Jake Fromm? He was a bad boy at Georgia.
Well, he wasn't really.
Absolute trash in the NFL.
He was just a game manager. He just handed the ball to Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and had that defense and still lost
Zach
to Tua.
Zach Mettenberger was a bad boy at LSU.
No, he was not. Joe Burrow was a bad boy at LSU. Zach Mettenberger, not so much. But I know what you mean. Vince Young was a bad boy, and we know what Young's problems were.
Vince Young turned in the greatest college performance I've ever seen.
Vince Young, like the natural talent Vince Young had, I mean, he won himself 30 games in the NFL just off of natural ability because there wasn't anything about development and coaching.
Yeah, he's just the best athlete on the field. Yeah.
That went into Vince's NFL career. Corey, hot take Friday. What's your hot take this week?
You know what? I'm going to put it out there. Titans are going to win on Sunday. Boom.
That was my take, too. Give me a score.
20-17.
I mean, I'm going 9-7. I don't know where we're getting 20 points from. But...
Well, you know, Jordan Mason did run for like $160 against the Jets on Monday night. Jets go out to the West Coast for Monday Night Football, fly back to New York, have to fly here. It's not a great scenario for them. But who knows? They didn't look great. I also think that the Snead matchup on Garrett Wilson's a favorable one for them because Wilson's not necessarily the best against man press. He's much better against zone statistically. So we'll see if that holds up, because that's definitely where Aaron Rodgers wants to go with football. It's going to be interesting to see.
Corey Curtis from News 2, as always on our program. I disagree, but I still love.
You know what? That's what makes it entertaining. If we agreed on everything, it would just be boring. We'd be like an old married couple.
Yeah, nobody wants that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number on the program. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I do want to get to that. Plus, one person I respect, former NFL executive, former coach, been in the media for a while, a guy I respect, was asked, would the Titans pull the plug on Levis and go to Rudolph? What he had to say about it, we'll do that coming up next here on the program. And be sure to tune into the sounds today on 94.9 The Fan. First pitch at 6:35. Pre-game's at 6:20. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball this season presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
Just coming to the work the same way I have every day, regardless of what happens the day before. And that's been the MO since day one. I feel like it's also a part of my game that I've improved on a lot in my career. There have been times where a game like that would have lingered for days, weeks, and really just kept getting to me. But I didn't lose sleep Sunday night, you know. I knew that I'm a good quarterback in this league, and obviously a lot of things to get better on. But watching that tape, I still have that confidence, and knowing that it's just kind of a fluke play that I can definitely learn from. So, I've still got all the confidence in the world in this team and everything. Just got to come to work every day the same way, regardless of what happens.
Okay, that was Will Levis right there saying, I didn't lose any sleep after what happened Sunday. You didn't? I mean, I don't want to say I lost some sleep on your behalf, but I was a depressed Titans fan on Sunday night, I'll tell you. But Pat Kerwin has been around the NFL forever. He's been in the media for like the last 25 years. He was an executive in the NFL. He was a former coach. And he hosts on NFL radio on Sirius XM. And he was asked, okay, what should the Titans, if things continue to go the way they've gone, should they pull the plug on Levis and at some point flip it to Mason Rudolph? Here's what Pat Kerwin, a guy whose respect I have an immense amount of respect for. Here's what Pat Kerwin said.
I don't think they'll pull the plug on Levis. They got to make this work. But I think it's a rough ride for a while. And, you know, today he's talking about, I think I'm a good quarterback, and I don't say any of that stuff publicly. Just go out and get ready to play better. That's all. But I don't think they're going to turn to Rudolph right away. I think this is the guy they're going to ride with, and I think he's going to be good enough. So you got to give him time. He's had 10 career starts. You know, how can we even evaluate him, right? I quote Gil Brandt all the time, 20 starts before you evaluate him. He has 10 starts. He's got a 3-7 record. He only threw 9 touchdowns in 10 games. That's terrible. His sack ratio is 1 every 10. All right? So and if you get after him, which is now, you know, point towards the blocking for a minute, if you can get after him, he's 0-5 when he gets sacked 3 times. So I'm not sold on him, but I don't think they're going to be bailing out on him either.
Okay. The most important thing he said in that is when he quoted the late Gil Brandt, and he said, you got to wait 20 games on a quarterback. Well, we're 10 games in, which means 10 games to go. So that would be about week 11. I'm fine with waiting that long. I mean, I'm really fine at this point with waiting the whole season. Because the one thing I know about Mason Rudolph is this. If you go to Mason Rudolph at quarterback, he's going to win some games. He's not going to win a lot of games, but he's going to win some games at quarterback. He's going to game manage you to victory. He would have done it on Sunday against the Bears. And I'm not even a Mason Rudolph fan. But if you were to go 4 or 5 games in and flip the keys to Rudolph, and you're 1-4, and you turn it over to Rudolph and he goes out there and everything, if that's the case, then you're going to finish with 6 or 7 wins, and you're going to be picking 7, 9, somewhere like that, and you won't be able to pick a young quarterback to come in here. So now you got to go to the free agent market. So it's going to be a Kirk Cousins type quarterback or Sam Darnold or something like that. And again, we're trying to find a superstar around here to play quarterback. So I can live with 10 more games. And Pat just told you, like, hey, it's going to be rough for a little bit. I'm okay with 10 more games. And if Will Levis is still doing stupid stuff 10 games from now, and I think he will be, because I think the jump in season from season one to season two is actually more important than the jump from, again, game 19 to game 20. But if he's still doing the stupid stuff then okay. Everybody has to reassess. But I think I can live with week 11 and saying, okay, now you got to make a call. Because, again, people are like, well, if you don't believe in Will Levis right now anyways, what are you going to – there's nothing you can do. Just like there's nothing you can do to fix the offensive line other than go coach them harder, Bill Callahan. There's nothing you can do. It is, at that point, what it is. That's it. Can't coach them harder. Can't. They're not changing, boys. I think that's the old saying. Todd Haley, the old coach, told me that Bill Parcells used to say, they ain't changing, boys. So he's the quarterback, and the other option's a game manager who's going to, again, win you 7 or 8 games. Kind of like Kerry Collins when Kerry was here. Now, I still think Kerry was probably a little bit better than Mason Rudolph, but he wasn't the starting quarterback that he was with the Giants when he was here as the backup, and he game managed you to 13-3 because you had an elite defense and Chris Johnson at running back and a good offensive line with Mike Munchak coaching him, which is also pretty important. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. Add that to the list if you want to weigh in on that. Here on the program, Stillman and Company, we'll get to your phones next. 615-737-1025 here on 1025-106 through the game. Fireball Whiskey. Right, there's no better way to celebrate the start of fall. It really is the start of fall. We're in the middle of September. There's no better way to do that than with ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. If you're going to be hanging out this weekend, and Ian, I am hopeful that tonight at around 10:30 p.m. I can pour a nice Fireball shot to celebrate what I hope. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but what I hope will be the industry person of the year for the Canadian Country Music Awards.
Okay.
I am hopeful we can celebrate with an ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. I mean, I can. She can't, obviously. But I'm very, very excited. So that's Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey, night to night. Please do responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Tell me something good about the quarterback, because I am very disappointed in Sunday's performance and do not have much faith. Sunday against the Jets.
You know, because I went back and looked at the film. I want to see why he threw an interception and why, you know, the decision maker was kind of off a little bit. And as you look at it, I think it's kind of correctable. And me and Derek talked about this on the show, you know, when we did our pre-show game last Sunday, is don't try to play the hero ball. Don't try to make something happen when nothing's there. If you just look at the whole situation, when he threw the pick six, if he just gets sacked and holds onto the ball, you can live another play and then also try to make a play on the next play. So, you know, it's just, you know, I don't like to say bonehead play because I'll never disrespect another player. I just think that it was a really, really bad decision on throwing that pick six.
There you go. That was Chris Sanders saying, I don't want to call anybody a bonehead, but it was a bad decision to throw that pick six. I think the differences between me and Chris and Corey and everybody else is I just think when everyone's like, oh, no, it'll be fine. These are correctable mistakes. I'm like, but I haven't seen the corrections. So why now am I going to think he's going to make these corrections where everyone else is like, oh, no, they'll correct it. I'm like, okay. Make of it what you will. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com at 615-737-1025. Ian, we need your opinion on this.
Oh, boy.
Randy texts in. He says it's going to be interesting once you're talking about me. Once you're a parent, how you view expectations and how that's going to change. It doesn't matter if you're talking about your expectations for the Titans and their players or your own child. You'll have an entirely different view on how you address both meeting expectations and expectations that aren't met. I guarantee it, Randy says. Ask any parent, and then he capitalizes the P in parent. Ask any parent out there. Ian, you're a parent.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Granted, my, you know, children are both under 5 and under, so not quite to, like, expectations levels, you know, for, you know, sports or anything like that.
Right. Like, you have no expectation for May to do anything other than to just,
like, hey,
not,
you know, have fun, you know, like, yeah, you know, just be a kid. So it's kind of like, hey, but I mean, there is, you know, to some truth as far as like everybody kind of does things at their own pace. And even when you're a kid and you're, you know, a baby, and every baby is different, every child is different. So it's just, some kids go at a different pace and do things quicker and slower at certain things than others. And it's just, you kind of just roll with the flow.
So do you think my expectations on the Titans will change because I'll be a parent?
I don't know about expectations for the Titans, but you might be a little bit more lenient when it comes to some criticism. I could buy that.
So here's what I think, and I could be totally wrong about this. I don't think I'm changing on the radio. Like, I think I'll change. My priorities will change. My priorities have already changed. You know, like, my priorities have changed significantly since I found out I was going to be a parent. But I don't think my priorities on the radio are going to change. Like, my priority as to where the radio show may lie probably changes a little bit, simply because, you know, right now it's number one, but it won't be number one then. But again, I don't think, like, my expectations on the radio change. I don't think the show changed. I don't think that, you know, just because I have a kid, and again, I could be totally wrong about it. They're going to be talking through my rear end. But I don't think all of a sudden, because I have a child, I'm going to be on the air, say this were last Monday, but it's, you know, next season, and say, well, it's okay that they lost that game to the Bears. Maybe it does. I don't know. But I don't think that's going to happen. Could be wrong. Mike from Nashville says, do you think Mason Rudolph gives the Titans a better chance to win? My question is, win what? Does Mason Rudolph give you a better chance to win the Super Bowl? No, he does not. Because you have no chance to win the Super Bowl with Mason Rudolph, and I don't think you really have a chance to win the Super Bowl right now with Will Levis. Does Mason Rudolph give you a better chance to win on Sunday? Yes. Because if the coach says to Mason Rudolph before the fourth quarter, whatever you do, nothing stupid, then I guarantee you will not see Mason Rudolph go out there and backhand the ball 10 yards down the field right into the arms of a defensive back to run it into the end zone for a touchdown. Does Mason Rudolph give you a better chance to win in the future? Like next season and the year after that and the year after that? Probably not. So it's a very loaded question when you ask me, if I think that Rudolph gives you a better chance to win. Do I think he gives you a better chance to win on Sunday? Yes. Everything else, it's iffy. Because Ben says, if Levis plays till week 11, the Titans will probably be somewhere around 3-7. And then Rudolph will still get them to 6 or 7 wins. So, maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I do think Mason Rudolph is going to win games if he's the quarterback, just not a lot of them. I think Mason Rudolph's probably a 5 or 6 win quarterback. So if Levis goes for 2/3 of the year and wins you 3 games, and then you have a third of the year, then Rudolph probably wins you 1 or 2. Now, if the defense is super elite, then maybe that changes the discussion at least a little bit. One texter says, I'm a parent, and there's a difference when you're raising your kid and saying, have fun. But as a coach and a teacher, Levis is an adult, and right now he's uncoachable, and that won't change. That's what I think. Like, that's what I thought. If we were going to see a change in kind of the way he handles the game, we would have seen the change from week one, or from year one to year two. One texter says, I have 3 kids and am still critical of my favorite sports team. I do not understand the correlation. Although I'm kind of hating on John because his previous text into the text line was saying that my reaction to DeMario when Will Levis made up a player on the Jets earlier this week was over the top. I'm still mad about that. I mean, you guys can say it doesn't matter all you want. That doesn't, I don't know if you guys have learned this over the years. You saying, that's so dumb, Jared, and then 15 other people saying something like that, that's not going to change my opinion. I find that to be excuse making. The we don't want to crap on Levis, so we'll just pretend like it's not a big deal. Not the, oh, I'm going to convince you that you are wrong about this, because I thought it was so stupid. Steven from Hendersonville says, it's hilarious Jared doesn't believe the softening is coming. I think the softening is coming. I just don't think the softening on the radio is coming.
Oh, you'll still rip the Titans, but.
Thank you.
But, you know, just maybe some extra perspective wouldn't hurt here and there.
Extra perspective to rip them?
Sure.
Or to not rip them?
Both.
We'll see. We'll see. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I am picking the Titans to win on Sunday. Somebody actually texted me. They said, I got this big parlay going, and I, you know, what do we think about the Titans? I was like, I think they're going to win. I don't feel very good about it, though. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And I do wonder what happens if they don't on Sunday. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106.3 The Game.